I've been bullied by like people who were supposed to protect me. The person my father was with at the time would like really outcast me. She would like sometimes lock the door and say, no, you're taking time away from me and my family. I wasn't displayed like on the fridge of my grandparents because I didn't fit the aesthetic.
Yeah.
When you're being outcasted, like, oh no, you're too dark, or your hair is gross, you have a bush and all of this, you start asking yourself, maybe you're the problem.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, okay, let me acclimatize and like, you know, present myself in a way that's worthy of being on the fridge. I remember in grade 7, there was this girl. It was picture day, and I had a straight pony. And someone dared her to pull off my pony in front of the whole school.
Hey guys, you're tuned into Unfiltered Chats with Z, a podcast for open and honest conversations of challenges and experiences of the youth. Get ready to embark on a journey of self-discovery, laughter, and much more. Let's dive in. On today's episode, we'll be talking about how our childhood experiences have an influence on us in the future. Today, I have my friend Harmony with us. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Anisandile. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking nervous.
I'm excited.
Same. So, can you tell us about your background and a bit about your childhood experiences?
So, when you say my background, necessarily how I was raised or like...
Mm. How were you raised?
So I was raised in a two-parent household. Mm. My parents were never married. I stayed with my mom, stayed with her for most of the time, lived with my grandmother, my auntie. So a household with only women, mainly women, and visit my father occasionally, that side of my family. Have siblings on that side also. And I can say I was really raised by my mom, truly. Like, she's really done most of the molding and the shaping and the, you know, the construction work into shaping me into who I am. And I am grateful for everyone who has contributed. But yes, that's more so the dynamic of...
Yeah. So how do you feel your childhood experiences have influenced you and the person that you are today?
Yo, greatly. Like, I think... my childhood experiences have really shaped my outlook on life. My experiences have helped mold me into who I am, who I'm becoming, positive and negative, you know. And I think...
How would you say positively? Specific things?
I think there's even positive through the negative experiences because I've learned a lot of lessons that has brought me to a place where I had to sit with myself and the things that I had to go through. So positively... I'm grateful that I could be brought up in a house where art is respected and, like, you know, creativity is encouraged. I feel like not everyone is as privileged as me. And I feel like if I wasn't in that space and environment, I might not be who I am. I might not have the same level of expression that I do today. Mm. So I think that's definitely something I can be so grateful for. And, like, negatively, I think... Obviously, like, growing up in a colored community, like, you know, colored community is supposed to be the most diverse community.
Yeah.
When in actuality, it's also, like, the most divided.
Yeah.
Because we are so diverse. And, you know, there's been a lot of, like, how a typical colored girl supposed to be and how she's...
supposed to look.
Yes. Not just beauty standards, but also just, like, how she, you know... walks, like how she moves, how she operates, like in her daily life. And I feel like a lot of those external expectations were forced onto me, like by people I love, intentionally or unintentionally. I feel like, you know, just having to spend 6 hours straightening your hair while you're watching your cousin swim.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a nice feeling. Or like having to feel like you need to change who you are to be acceptable for society. I feel like that was something that I really had to face. And I always, like, felt a constant need to, you know, be a shapeshifter whenever I enter a room, to fit into that room and not make the room adjust and adapt to who I am. And I think that has affected me negatively, but it's also brought me to a place where I had to come to terms of, like, who actually are you?
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of destroyed me in many ways, but it also helped me, you know, collect the pieces of who I am to rebuild myself again. And I'm currently still remembering myself.
Yeah. So on the topic of bullying, can you describe any instances of bullying that you have experienced during your school years and how did it affect you?
So I think like naturally, okay, wait, before we go into that, like how would you define bullying so that I can give you a worthy answer?
Literally, like any situation where you felt like, I don't know, like it wasn't, like it just was negative towards you. Like for me, I would say in terms of like looks, the way I looked, if someone commented on it and it made me feel bad, I would say, and it was a constant thing, I would say maybe I'll take that as bullying, or the way I acted, they would speak, or just comments that people had that was like, you know, it was constant, yeah, I'd say.
Yeah, so I feel like even the comments that were not constant, some of them still had like a lasting impact on how I perceived myself and how I interacted with people around me. I feel like in primary it was deep, yo. Because in primary I feel like I was still developing that backbone.
Yeah.
And also in primary I also didn't like, I wasn't confident in who I was externally. Like, until I started transitioning into high school, like, primary, like, before I had braces, like, yo, before we became part of the brace face gang, like, my teeth were all pointing east, west, north, and, like, I feel like I was bullied for my teeth a lot often, like, I couldn't close my mouth, literally, and figuratively, I'm joking, but, like, I think, overall, I've been bullied, if that's your definition of bullied, by like people who are supposed to protect me the most. And I feel like because they treated me like that, like if your own father or your own whoever or your own XYZ is observant of this behavior and tolerant of this behavior, like you start asking yourself, maybe you the problem. So then when it came into school environments, it was nothing different. Like I just continued to, you know, allow and tolerate this behavior, because to me it was like, if everyone thinks it's okay, then surely. Yeah. So instances I would be like, you know, although like my upbringing, like I am colored and all of that, like when I was like around about 6-ish, 7, I moved to like, you know, the burbs. And that in itself was a different transition. Yeah. But I also feel like there's not a lot of colored people like where we are. Like I literally was like one of two colored people that I know of, and that also was a challenge within itself, because now when you're being outcasted, like, oh no, you're too dark, or your aura's gross, you have a bush and all of this, and then when you go into a community where it's predominantly black and black people have more similar features to you than colored people, and then even the black people are like also outcasting you. Oh no, you are a wannabe black person.
Yeah.
Oh no, you this. I remember the first time I ever did braids. Yo, Sandile, like in time.
What grade were you in?
I think grade 5. Like the first time I ever did braids, like someone called me like a colonizer. And to me, I don't know, I just needed something to fix up.
Yeah.
Like something quick to go. And I feel like there's just been so many instances where it's like you're not black enough, you're not colored enough, you're not Indian enough.
So like you're just,
never enough wherever you go. Mm. And I feel like that also was a very strong idea and belief that I kept true to myself. Like you're not enough wherever you go. So you always have to overcompensate because you lack in every... So I think that, and then also like it's always been about like, hey, yo. I remember in grade 7, there was this girl, like, she was also battling her own things at the time, wanting to fit in and all of that. And in response to that, like, someone dared her to, like, it was picture day, and I had a straight pony. Mm. And someone dared her to pull off my pony in front of the whole school. Yo, I'm so sorry, guys. Yo. Okay,
did she actually do it?
Yeah, it was deep. Like, it was deep. But the reason why I had a pony in the first place, like, my mom was never in alignment with that, because my mom is someone who's very, like, strong in her identity. Like, she knows who she is.
Like, your natural hair.
Like, yes. Yeah. Like, she was wearing an afro when all of our friends, all of my aunties were relaxed and forcing, you know.
Yeah.
Come here, let me make you right. And I was like, lost my hair. Like, I feel like my mom's always been very strong in her identity. So for her, she couldn't understand like how her daughter was so insecure with the features she wears so proudly.
Yeah.
And like...
But for you, it was different
because I was also exposed to things that she was unaware of, and I didn't have the voice to even express it to my own mom.
Yeah, and you're in primary, so like,
you're so still like,
small. So some of these things, you're like, is it normal or is it just me? Like,
Yeah, so I feel like with natural hair, like now it was for today, and I feel like I wasn't displayed like on the fridge of. Mm. My grandparents, because, I didn't fit the aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I thought...
Oh, they wanted you to look like a certain
way. Yeah. But, like, they only displayed, like, my cousins and everyone. But, like, I wasn't there. So, in my mind, I was like, okay, let me acclimatize and, like, you know, present myself in a way that's worthy of being on the fridge. Even though it was something so stupid and insignificant that manifested in me, like, changing my whole external appearance just to... be recognized by people who is just supposed to love you unconditionally. So then I did that, and I was crying for Pondo. Like, she's like, you're not straightening your hair, but you can get an extension. And I was like, okay. So I got us like an extension, and like it was just for today, nothing deep.
Yeah.
We're standing in the queue, like we have like this morning assembly lineup, and now we're walking. Because I was a prefect at the time, so I had to go in between the lines. Mm. And as I'm walking in between, like, she comes.
Yo.
She grabs it. off. And I was just like, yo, deep. So I in that moment, like, I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
Like, I was really shattered. Like, I know to the external, a lot of people are laughing. Like, it might not seem as much. But, like, she didn't understand why I was doing it. And I also didn't understand why she did the things she did. And I feel like that, like, really shaped it. Like, you know, no matter how much you try, you'll never be that thing. And then after that, I went to the bathroom. I had to untatamula. And that picture, I had a big afro. Like, it was so big. Like, they even it wasn't even fitting in the frame of the camera. Like, and they were just like, And I was like, not again.
But no, shout out to you. Shout out to you for making
so
a plan.
I feel like... Yeah. Even that, like, experience, like, that's literally, like, a representation of, like, you know, being forced to step into your authenticity. Mm. Like, this, and I feel like that's literally what happened to me throughout. Like, I was forced to accept who I am. Like, I was forced to wear that afro in that photo. And I feel like there's so much, like, being a dark skin or... Yeah. I might not be dark skin, like, on a greater spectrum, but, like, in the colored community, I'm considered dark skin. Mm. Like, being a dark-skinned colored girl, I feel like there's so much things that we experience that we don't talk of. And even on the contrary, like, on the other side, like, I feel like when I've spoken to, like, my lighter-skinned colored cousins, they've also experienced the same amount of colorism just from different perspective. Like, oh, you think she's all that,
because you're light-skinned.
Like, and so we've all like experienced our own things, and I feel like it's a topic that really goes like under the mat. I hope that answers your question.
It does. Okay, moving on to like family dynamics. Can you tell us about your family dynamics and values instilled in you during your upbringing?
So I think because, like, we were not, like, as privileged, but we do have... I'm grateful for all of the things that we have, and I feel like we well off compared to a lot of other people and a lot of circumstances that my relatives have and all of that. I feel like my mom always made it known to me that, look, you're not always going to have everything, but you need to make use of what you have and, you know, be grateful and utilize the resources that you do have. Like, so from even a young age, like, you know, creating your own toys and making your own things, I feel like that's really shaped me, like, being grateful and, you know, for what you have and still being humble. Like, even if you do have that thing now, you must appreciate it 10 times more because
someone else doesn't have it. Even if it's the smallest thing.
Yeah, so I feel like gratitude was something that was really instilled into me. And also creativity, because that really forced me to, you know, go into different environments and I create the things that other people would just get. I'm grateful.
And it also brings in hard work. Compared to other people, they just get it and then you actually have to work for it.
So like creativity, like always finding solutions and like things to come up. You know, you're not gonna do this, but how are you gonna fundraise to get that thing that you want? Yeah. And like it like really inspired that entrepreneurial, you know, energy.
And always making a plan.
So I think those are some great values that I'm grateful that my mom and everyone around me has instilled into me.
Okay. So how do you believe your family environment influenced your personal development and decision making process?
I feel like drastically. I feel like all of us are a product of who we were raised by. And I feel like right now we're at the age where we're transitioning into that place of, you know, taking accountability for our own lives instead of blaming like our circumstances and things like that. And yes, like when I was younger, I could have blamed, you know, I'm like this because of this, because my mom did this, because my dad cheated us like this, because of X, Y, Z, but I feel like right now I'm transitioning to take accountability for my own life. May you please repeat your question?
How do you feel or believe that your family environment has influenced your personal development?
Okay, so must I make practical examples? Will that help?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, like, you know, being, like, of two different households, that back and forth thing, it's always, like, triggered, like, who am I able to rely on?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also, you know, communicated through the way I interact with people. Like, let's say, specifically, like, masculine figures in my life. Yeah. Like, because my mom has always been the most prominent person in my life and she's always been there for me. And, like, with my father, there's always been a question mark, like, if I'm able to ask. Because, like, I always felt, like, a burden when it came to my father's side. Like, my presence was either not wanted growing up or, like, I was always cheated, like I'm not supposed to be there. Like, I remember there would be times where the person my father was with at the time, like, would, like, really, 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 like, outcast me. Like, she would, like, sometimes lock the door and say, no, you're taking time away from me and my family and my husband. Or she would, like, introduce me as someone, like, no, this is not, like, I, like, you're not associated. Yeah. Like, in public, like, she would ask me to walk, like, a few meters back from everyone else because she didn't want to be associated with me. And I feel like that's really shaped, like, my out, like, making decisions, like, I'm not worthy enough of being here. Like, when I do get opportunities that present themselves to me, like, I don't deserve this. Like, that's really triggered. Like, you see that feeling of not feeling enough or being enough? Like, I think that's really triggered how I, you know, navigate my way through making decisions. And that ended up with me, like, self-sabotaging good things. That come my way. Like, because let's say, like, for example, like, that fear, I always used to feel anxious of having to ask my father for things. I don't know why. I just always felt very, very anxious. And when there were times where I had to ask him, like, and he wouldn't, like, you know, pull through on it, like, that would also, like, leave me feeling like, oh, no, you can't rely on certain things for certain things. And that would also, like, with guys, like, if they offer to help me, like, I wouldn't trust them 100% to do and complete the task, which actually ended up sabotaging my friendships and relationships with some of the really close people that I had in my life because I didn't trust them enough to follow through on their word because people who were supposed to follow through didn't. So I feel like that did, like, kind of...
Yeah, had an effect on, like, your relationships with other people and just the way, like... Your interactions with other people.
So I think that feeling of not feeling worthy enough has triggered how I interact with other people. Also, the unlike, you know, being a dark skin colored girl, I feel like I've also compared myself to a lot of people. And I there were like, this is like all like growing up, like elements of being envious of other girls. So within that, like, you know, expression of envy, I feel like I've mistreated them unconsciously because I wanted to be like them.
Yeah.
Because how I was not enough.
I'd also say I feel like it's the same because, like, with me, like, as a dark skin, I feel like when I look at other light-skinned girls, it's like, because even with social media, you can see, like, low-key, there's, like, you know, it's not balanced. You can low-key see that the light skins, you know, there's low-key a privilege there. So it changes the way you see yourself and them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does.
And it really affects the way, like, we interact with each other. Like, you know, like, even in this day and age, you can't just say someone's pretty. The first thing that comes to mind is she dark skin? Is she light skin? Like, you can't just acknowledge the fact that. And I feel like that was really hard for me, like, you know, to sit amongst light skin colored girls and still feel valid.
Yeah.
Like, that was something that I really had to come and, like, really work on. So I feel like that, just, like, the environment of, you know, being colored and all of that, I really had to come to terms of, like...
How would you say you did that? Like, was there specific things that you, like, actually had to do to tell yourself, like, I'm worthy, you know?
I think I had to stop straightening my hair. Like, I had to really, you know, once I actually started taking care of my natural hair and, like, putting in the work, buying the products or, like, making the concoctions, spending hours strand by strand, I started to appreciate it more because I put more time and effort because my whole life I had this notion that, oh, no, your hair is not manageable.
Yeah.
Like, it's untamable, like, and, like, being able to tame it and to control it, like, kind of was me, like, you know, shutting down and, like, hushing the external voices and actually doing it to myself. So once I started doing my own hair and putting in that time and effort, I feel like I started to fall in love with my natural hair, even though it was a work. It was work. Like, I felt like my hair routine was more healthier than the food I was actually eating. Avocado, banana.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, and I feel like that helped me. Also, I would say social media in a sense, but that wasn't healthy. It helped, but it wasn't healthy for the long term.
Yeah. Because, like, there's also negative things.
Like, I feel like social media, like, once I started posting, I started getting recognized for how I was and actually got compliments. And that started, it started to hit different, like, and that, like, kind of, you know, that external validation, like, once you put your value in your external, like, you will only be validated for that and seen for that. And that's when it started becoming, But it did help me, like, you know. And also, like, you see, as beauty standards started to change, like, oh, natural hair, curls, we want this, we want that.
And on social media especially.
Yeah, like, as I got a phone and, like, started to transition into social media, that's when those things started to change. So it was so different because, like, a few years back, I was getting bashed for the same features that I was getting praised for. And it was just like, okay, like,
I feel like a lot of people can agree on that one. Are there any specific lessons or experiences from your childhood that have a lasting impact on you?
Lessons, I would be like,
good or bad.
Like, it's not your fault. It's definitely not your fault. Like, the way people treat you is not a reflection of your value. It's just a reflection of the things they're carrying and, you know, the pain that they haven't resolved. And you don't need to be a product of your pain, I think. I feel like there's been so many times where I've just, like, threw so many pity parties for myself and expected people to show up. Like, welcome to the party. And, like, no, girl. You have to, like, like, you can have your moment to lament. And then once that's done, you must, you know, step back. And I also feel like, okay, lessons from my childhood. Basically, there was a time where, like, my mom, she's very, I don't know how to explain, like, she doesn't believe in, like, dolls and Popo AC, and I'm grateful for that partly. So I've never had, like, you know, the whole girly thing growing up, even though some parts of me, like, also wanted
that.
And she just didn't believe in, like, she'd rather buy books and, like, Legos than a doll and, like, makeup and things like that. So there was a time, I don't know how old I was, but I remember we were in the shop And I asked my mom for a tiara. And in that moment, she said no. Like, she was shouting. And I felt bad. Mm. Like, I think I was like 6. I started to cry a little bit. But the thing is, I didn't ask for much. Like, so when I did ask, like, it was like, yo. And then somebody else in the shop actually ended up buying me that tiara.
Really?
Yeah, like, they're like, they just looked at me like, oh, and then they're like, okay, let me buy you the tiara.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because my mom didn't have the means. It was just something she just did not believe
in. What was her reaction when that other person bought
it? She wasn't accepting. She's like, you can't say no.
Yeah.
So, like, years later, she actually apologized to me.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm sorry that I didn't buy you the tiara in that moment. Like, I couldn't see beyond my values. Yeah. And I couldn't see that this is just something that this little girl wants, not because, like, the whole world and everything. And I feel like that's something I had to learn, like, you know, your parents are also just trying the best with what they have.
And they're also parents for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. And I also had to, like, come to terms with, like, just that lesson, like, you know, sometimes we want the best for people, but we can't see beyond what we believe is best for them.
Yeah.
And, like, I think it's important, like, sometimes, like, you know, like, even if you look at our friend group, like, sometimes you, like, really angry at someone. You just want to bash them and confront them. But little do we know, in that moment, that person might just need a hug.
Yes.
And
you never know, like, what they're going
through. Yeah, sometimes, you know, surrendering our beliefs and just, like, trying to be more understanding and compassionate towards each other. Yeah, I think that's something that I learned, like, you know, just trying to take a step back and, like, you know.
Okay, now bullying and its effects. Have you been bullied, and how did your bullying impact your self-esteem and confidence?
So I think we kind of touched on this, but I do think that my bullying did affect my confidence, but it also made me find the real confidence.
Yeah.
So I think I'm grateful that I was bullied. Yeah. Like, actually, like, I am, because I feel like if I was just, you know, if I just thought I was beautiful growing up, I wouldn't have the same value, and I wouldn't be able to, you know, identify people for their different features that are beautiful, because I would only think that I'm beautiful. Yes. And I think I'm grateful. I think it's affected me negatively, like, where I've compared myself. And also, like, changed myself into different modes. And also, like, not believing I'm enough, not believing I'm worthy, like, always overcompensating for the lack. Like, whether, if it's not, okay, you might not be the most prettiest in the room, but you're going to be the loudest. You might not be this, but you're going to be the smartest. Like,
yeah. I always, or the best dressed.
Yes. Like, like, I always found ways to overcompensate for what I felt I lacked.
Mm.
And sometimes there was no need for that. Like, you know, there was really no need for that. And I feel like because, like, in my primary years, I didn't find my value in, like, my external. I was always bullied for that. I always, like, I feel like I was very competitive when it came to, like, academics.
Yeah.
Like, I think I was an overachiever. And, like, I always tried to, like, overcompensate. Like, okay, my family's not going to recognize me for this, but at least that certificate of being in the top 10 is going to be on that fridge, or, like, things like that. Like, I always felt like, you know what? Yeah. And I feel like those experiences have low-key shaped my art. So I'm grateful for that also, and, like, you know, my creativity, because, like, it really speaks to, like, a large community, because I feel like we've all been discriminated against in some shape or form. So I think, bullying, it's not nice, but I think everyone has to go through it.
Because with me, primary, I wouldn't say I was bullied, like, that much. It would always be, like, those little comments that, you know, the boys make and stuff. But, like, me, I feel like I was so, like, sensitive when I was younger. Like, in primary, like, people knew, like, I would always cry, even if it was the smallest things. Like, and I think, I don't really think I got bullied. I just think I struggled to, like, talk to other people. So I wasn't very social. So I would have, like, one or two friends. But that would also, I used to think, like, I was the problem. Maybe, like, people didn't want to be friends with me. So mm-hmm. most of the time I just kept to myself. Or like I only started making friends in like grade 3 and 4. That's when I was like in a big friend group. But before that, I just had like one or two friends. I wasn't really social. But I feel like as time went by, like I started becoming, you know, more vocal and stuff. But like, I don't really think my bullying or like, you know, all the negative comments really had a big impact on me because it wasn't like that, you know, that hectic.
Mm. Yeah. But I think we share like similarities in terms of like believing we were the problem.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people cut themselves or sell themselves short or sabotage good things in their life because they feel like they are the problem. And they're assuming people's thoughts about them.
Yeah.
And
I feel like it's when you're smaller, like, yeah. If you don't get that support from an elderly person to tell you that, okay, this is normal, you'll think that you are the problem.
Yeah.
Because you don't actually realize that other people are going through this. You just think it's just you. And
but yeah. In some cases, it's really not normal. Yeah. Like in my case, like I thought like the way that I was getting cheated was normal. Like, but it really wasn't. Yeah, like, it really wasn't normal. And I normalized it. And that's why I always justified actions of people.
Yeah.
So I think, hey, either way, whether it's normal or not normal, what people think about you is none of your business.
Yeah, it has nothing to do
with you. It's nothing to do with you.
So did you have any support systems in place to cope with your bullying, such as like friends, family, or like a mentor?
I feel like because I just assumed I was the problem, I didn't actually acknowledge that there was a problem. So I couldn't really express that to anyone. Yeah. Only until like now, recently. But before, I think I would always just keep it within.
Yeah, so you wouldn't like tell
anyone. Yeah, I don't think anyone really knew and anyone like really acknowledged. And then I'll just have a random outburst. And then, yeah, it wasn't really healthy. But if I'm gonna say someone was really responsible in helping me, like, you know, see the value within myself, I would say it's God.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like God has been my biggest mentor, and like, yeah, it's really helped me, you know.
So were there any, like, while during this bullying or while you'd get bullied, were there any, like, people in specific that would actually stand up for you?
Sure. I don't think so. I actually,
no one that she like can remember.
Okay, I would say my mom. Like when she would hear or find out or see some of the things that were happening on that side, she would get really angry, and like she would set the boundary, like, no, this is not right, or like, why are you relaxing my child's hair, or like things like that.
Oh, but because she didn't know, most of the time she couldn't really stand up.
And I feel like no one really could stand up for me because I also didn't even know why people are standing up for me. Yeah. Like I didn't feel like. I felt like I deserved the treatment that I got.
Yeah.
And I think, I was forced to stand up for myself. Setting boundaries was something that was really hard for me to do. And like, you know, when you've been a doormat, all of a sudden you must be standing on your two feet. Yeah. It's a tricky situation to, you know, adjust to. But I feel like I stood up for myself. And like I said, also, I think God also stood up for me because, like, hey, he would hush those people. Like, all of a sudden, hey, so yeah, I think, yeah.
How do you think your experiences with bullying have shaped your perspective on personal relationships and conflict resolution?
Personal relationships. So I think, you know, that feeling of not feeling enough, like, has affected my personal relationships, be it friendships or, like, you know, I'm not deserving to, you know, come to this event or, like, sit amongst you guys or, you know, I think that's also affected, like, my personal relationships. I feel like, you know, being mistreated by people who I was supposed to trust, like, it made it hard for me to trust other people. And I always treated, like, people, like, I won't say drive-thrus, but I would say, like, they're not a constant variable.
Yeah.
Like, I have faith that this person is going to walk in and come out. So I think it's really affected me in that sense. And I would say with conflict resolution, like, because I was, like, as I was bullied, I would always be silent quiet about it. When there was conflict, I would just say, I'm fine.
Oh.
You know that, like, I'm fine, but you're not fine. Like, yeah. I'd say I'm fine. I was very silent about it. Like, I would face my demons within. Mm. And I think with conflict, like, I just let people treat me however, and then, like, go deal with the repercussions in silence.
Yeah.
So I think it taught me to...
So you wouldn't really say that you stood up for yourself, like, immediately, like, while it was happening? Terms of, like, the school bullying?
No, I feel like I only really started setting those boundaries, like, into high school. Mm. But, like, before, I think... I was just very quiet about it. Like, you really had to force it out of me. Like, are you sure? Are you sure you're fine then? Like, hey, I think I would deal with conflict silently. But now, obviously, the healthy approach is to be more expressive about it and, you know, be more compassionate. Because as much as you're going through things and people are mistreating you, that person is only doing what's been done to them.
Yeah. And
Hurt people.
Yeah.
Ooh, sorry. Guys, I'm sick.
Okay, so, high school experiences. So, transitioning to high school, what were some challenges you faced and how did you navigate them?
Boys. I think, I think boys were like, not just boys, but external attention. Mm. Because, like I said in primary, like, I wasn't really recognized for how I looked or anything. And when I transitioned into high school, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's...
Did you go to a different high school?
No.
To the one that you're
in? No. Okay, I went to a primary school, left the primary school, came back to that primary school. Then
went to the same high school.
Like, you know, like, because now... I know this is not healthy, but in South African schools, it's very common to find, like, older guys approaching younger girls. Mm. And because I haven't had, like, any person approach me or I've never been recognized, when people did compliment me, like, it was like, okay, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, okay, wait. Mm. So I think I really needed to, that was very, like, I was like, okay, like... I used to wake up to get those compliments, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like, because I've never been recognized for that, the moment I was recognized for that, I placed my entire value into my external. So I think, like, the challenges I faced, like, you know, being so fixated on the meretricious side and, you know, the external aspects of my being that I neglected who I actually am.
But I feel like that does happen a lot with high school and a lot of pretty girls. That's why you realize most of them make their looks, their personality, literally, like, their whole personality is the way they look.
I think you're thinking what I'm thinking. So, that was me. I won't lie. I think that was me for some time. And I started to feel a disconnect, like... Mm. Because the people I had around me, like, they were not really about me.
Yeah.
They're just about, like, you know. People I started attracting. Because, like, I feel like we only attract people on the same frequency as us. Mm. And because I was vibrating from a very low point, I attracted low vibes. Yeah. So the moment where I, you know, transitioned out of that, like, I felt disconnected from everything. And, like, you know, the people I was friends with, like... My best friend at the time, like, we even went our separate ways. And only, like, recently, like, we had to reconcile and come together because, hey, we were both, like, she was going one way, I was going one way. And we were just like, hey. Yeah. So I think those challenges would just be, like, you know, navigating, like, who you choose to be your friends based on what. Like, why are they your friends? Who do you surround yourself with? And then it would also be, like, you know, Where am I placing my value? Like, that was a challenge. Like, I always went back and forth between that.
Yeah.
And I think being so fixated on how external people perceive you that you neglect the one within.
Yeah.
So I think those are my challenges, like, actually, you know, being authentic. Those are, like, my biggest challenges, like, transitioning from primary into high school, you know.
Yeah, because I feel like with a lot of grade 8s, like, going into high school, especially with social media, you're thinking, like, pretty friend group. So now it happens where you want this big friend group, you want like the looks matter, and that's also where drama comes in. So now it's like you also lose yourself through that because you're not like being yourself. Now you being the person that like you being the person that other people want you to be. So yeah, it's just, you know, it's a lot.
I think that is me on social media because I had friends, but even with my friends, it was like, you know, even my friends felt like strangers, if that makes sense. So also with social media, like, you know, you're trying to present yourself in a specific way to strangers so that they can recognize you for things. So looks matter. Do they matter? Looks matter. But when your spirit is declining, your face is also declining.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that was me. Yeah. I hope that answers it.
Yeah, it does. Were there any memorable moments or experiences from high school that significantly shaped you, your outlook on life?
High school, I think making that decision to set those boundaries of like, no, you're not going to treat me like this. I think that's really shaped. Like, I remember my first crush in high school. Like, I was a very late bloomer and all. And he really mistreated me. And when I asked myself, instead of like, why, like, when I transitioned from that point and it's like, what is inside of me that attracted someone who believes it's okay to treat me this way? That's when everything shifted. So once I realized that I am attracting these type of people because I put my value in that, like, it shifted. So I think, like, being able to shift into that new space and, like, saying no, like, this is not how you're going to treat me. Like, I'm not going to be objectified. I'm not going to be seen as this. And if you want to do those things, not in my space.
Yeah.
And also,
that's
like,
not who I am.
Setting those boundaries, even with friends. Like, like, when they make certain comments of certain things. You know, sometimes at school, you're just there for school, but they worry about, like, how you look and all of that. And then they're making comments, like, setting those boundaries, treating people and showing people how to treat me. I think that's really, like, helped, you know, shift how I am in high school. Experiences in high school, I think, also, like, that talent show, so...
Yeah,
I was new to the school and there was a talent show at the school and there was a lot of new talent and there was a lot of amazing talent. Yeah. So I didn't think I was the most deserving and the most, you know, capable of executing and, you know, winning this talent show. And then a lot of things were happening in that week, like external pressure, teachers were shouting at me, like, because they had a miss, like, they're like, coming at me for my attitude. And I'm like, ma'am, you can say anything about me, but my attitude is not one. Yeah. And that's how I knew people didn't know me. Like, people basing me off
they
general assumptions. Or, like, you look like someone who's rude and intimidating. And I'm like, no. So there was a lot that I was going through. So in the midst of this talent show, I was very, like, heartful. Like, I don't know how to explain. Like, I was angry and I was sad because I missed my sound check because teachers are shouting at me. But they don't even know me, but they're shouting. And I was getting emotional. So I went to the bathroom. I, like, cried a little bit, like, fixed up myself. And I was like, okay, no, I'm going to perform now. Let me get in. And 5 minutes before the performance, I changed my song, like, the whole song, the whole performance, the intention behind the performance. And that performance was just an expression of, you know, the internal conflict I was facing within myself. And that resonated with a lot of people in the room when I performed it.
Yeah, that song I remember. I went in.
And I ended up winning the talent show.
Yeah.
And through that, like, that was a lesson of, like, you know, the world might have a perception of you, but also you must focus on what's within. I think, there's a Bible verse in John, greater is the one within than the one in the world. Like, that really taught me, like, you know, that experience really taught me, like, people are always going to be saying things left or right and said, but what is it that you need to say? And what is it that you are that's going to, you know, there's a song, Ishma's Baby, there's a song I'm thinking of, and it says, like, the godly form is bursting through the cracks. So if you just focus on what is within, it will ultimately reflect without. Yeah. And I think that that experience in a whole just taught me that. It also taught me to be resilient, you know. Don't give up.
Yeah.
Because if I was gonna give up, I was ready to pull out of that talent show.
Yeah.
And, you know, be resilient. Trust yourself. Trust your intuition. Because I trusted myself to change the song. Trust God to tell you what to do next. Mm. Yeah. So
and I could also say, like, I feel that in that moment, you could have easily chosen to let those teachers, like, just, like make you, like, you could have said, okay, because they said I have a bad attitude, I'm gonna have a bad attitude. Mm. But you didn't let that, like, make you. You didn't let what they said about you, like, make you or, like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, that's important. Like, not letting the external words define you. Like, that is very important. So I think that was an experience that really shaped, like, it validated everything that I needed to know. Like, you know, hey, trust yourself. Hey, be yourself. Like, it validated that. And I think that really was a very, very meaningful experience to me.
So, overcoming challenges and moving forward, reflecting on your journey, what have been some key milestones or turning points in overcoming challenges and moving forward?
So I would just go back to that experience. Like, yeah, I think that was also that performance. That performance was like something. Also, my very first performance. So because I was new to South Dance, I didn't know, like, because I was new, like, I didn't know that when you perform with the backtrack, when there's instruments, we must leave the backtrack. So, like, I had a performance and it was with, like, a backtrack.
The backtrack is, like, this, the music.
Yes. But when there's instruments, you don't play with the backtrack. So, I didn't know, I know it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, you see the Abo Takunda and those musicians, they were like, no, man, we can play this for you and you can perform with us. Yeah. And I was like, cool, dope, in 15 minutes, 10 minutes, they learned it. Now we're jamming, and I'm about to go perform. And, like, that performance, because that was an original song that I did and it was my first original song that I performed. And because of the positive feedback on that performance, it, like, reiterated, like, you know, even though it was very challenging to construct that song, and it reiterated that, you know, being authentic, like, because I was very original in that song, will always prevail than being someone that you're not. And I think, that really helped me overcome challenges. That first, because when there's performances the way I don't like, that I have to do, that I don't like, there's a song choice, this is not me, like, it's not me, it's not even in my vocal range, it's not in my comfort zone, when there's performances that I don't like, I go back to that performance, and, like, I was still myself, like, I can still be myself, so, within this performance, and, you know, I think, just being confident, because in that performance, I was very confident, and I feel like as time went by, I started to not be as confident in my performances because of the negative feedback. Because I'm mainly a rapper.
Yeah.
But then when I started singing, it wasn't my strongest point. Like, my vocal abilities were not as strong as people who've been singing for 10 years. So I really had to build that. And when I had to sing outside of my comfort zone, I wasn't as confident. And that was a challenge to me. But just reminding myself that I can do it. And when I did sing originally, it was received better. And when I was authentic in how I sang, it was received better. And when you are confident in what you're doing, it's always received better than someone who's just...
So now would you say you prefer singing or rapping?
I always prefer rapping because I feel like that's my roots. That's where I came from. I came from rapping, like, in the rap battles classroom. Like, that's where I came from. I prefer rapping. Also because even though with breathing and, like, using your diaphragm, you have to use both. I feel like with singing, I'm still developing, you know, like, a lot of aspects. I do prefer rapping. I do love singing. So right now, just say I prefer performing.
But because you like rapping.
Rapping is always me, because I started off writing poems and then it emulated into me, like, rapping. So like rhythm and poetry, like that's my comfort zone. But the magic always happens outside of your comfort zone. So that's singing. So that's what I'm trying to, you know. Both of them.
So how do you maintain a positive mindset and continue to pursue your goals despite your past your past experiences?
So positive mindset, number one, I choose not to see myself as a product of my pain. Like, I choose not to see myself defined by the things I've been through, the things I've witnessed, like, whether it be, like, abuse or, like, a lot of things that I've seen or been through. And, you know, actually taken the lessons from the experiences instead of the experiences.
Instead of, the like, the pain and...
Yeah. And I feel like experiences and people are, like, places. Like, not everyone's home.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to, you know... You need to get to that taxi rank so that you can get home. So I don't invalidate that taxi line that I had to wait in. Like, I don't invalidate that experience. So I think, you know, just keeping a positive mindset, like, instead of saying, why is this happening to me? What is this trying to teach me? Like, that really helped. Like, trying to get the value and keeping the value from the experience and letting go of the negative. I think also with goals, I would say, you know, being a bit more silent.
Yeah.
About your goals, because not everyone has the best intentions for you.
Real. That is so real.
And I feel like, I used to be here like, I want to do this. I want to do this.
I feel like this, especially this year, I told myself that not everybody needs to know everything.
And I feel like, because like, you know, you have this amazing idea and you share it to the group and then they're like, hey, boy, it's not the one. And now you feel discouraged and like, subconsciously, that
even though you wanted it and that, you like it so much,
that interaction affected like you even planting the seed. Now you can't even see it grow. So I think I'm planting the seed. Once you steal the fruits, I'm gonna say like, okay, by the way, I planted this seed. I think just being more silent in terms of what I'm trying to achieve and like, you know, trying to get it done
and then,
executing it. And what else? I think prayers also helped me keep a positive mindset, because even though I'm not communicating it to people, I'm communicating it to God and trusting that God's going to help me achieve this plan. That really helped, because most of the times he does help. And so I think that's also helped. And, you know, like renewing myself in like the promises God has had and planned for me, like, you know, because sometimes... you don't have the physical strength, or you don't believe that you're deserving and worthy enough. But then the ability to rely on the one who is, you know, who has the strength, like, that's really helped me, because I felt like I can surrender things that are not in my control. And that's really helped me, like, achieve, like, a lot of the good things that I've achieved, because I felt like I wasn't doing it alone. And when I feel like it's my responsibility to get myself out of this situation alone, it makes it 10 times harder than just saying, okay, well, this is the situation. How can I do this best?
So, moving on to rapid fire questions. What is your favorite childhood memory?
You know what? I have so many favorite, good, amazing childhood memories. I think climbing trees and playing with mud. I feel like those are my favorite childhood memories. Like, I used to have like this gang in my neighborhood, and it was like mixed with genders, so it was very balanced. But we were young; we didn't care. Like, we're just doing things, having fun. So I feel like in the moments where I didn't care about anything except just being present. Like, those are my favorite childhood memories. Like, we're just climbing trees.
Just having fun.
You're making a mess. We don't care how we look. We don't care what's happening next and what other people think of us. I think those are my favorite childhood memories. I'd also say, like, walking with my mom. Because before we had a car, like, we'd catch taxi and we'd walk. So walking with my mom, like, she'd always make it fun. Like, we'd always play games, like, while we're waiting in the taxi line or, like, while we're in the Gautrain or while we're walking. Like, she'd always play games. And I think making it, like, just witnessing my mom always being happy. Like, I was always, I never felt like I lacked anything. Mm. Like, I always felt happy. And just that feeling of feeling like you don't lack anything within and without. Yeah. I think those were, like, my favorite times. Like, yo, and you're just like, hey, you don't care about what's going on.
And you get carried away.
Whether you're on bash and your legs are, like, bleeding desperate for this. Your eyes are red from swimming. Like, hey, you don't care about you.
Yeah, those are the times. Okay. If you could give your younger self a piece of advice, what would it be?
Ooh. Yo, a lot of advice for this one. Number one, I would say that you're beautiful and you are perfect the way you are. Mm. You do not have to change yourself, you know, to fit other people's narratives. Mm. I'd also tell myself that it's not your fault that people treat you the way that they do. And you don't need to tolerate that behavior.
Yeah.
I'd also tell my younger self that, you know, life is too short not to be confident and not to smile.
Yeah.
Like,
and you miss out on a lot of things when you're not confident. Yes. Like, yeah, your fear of, like, being embarrassed is, like, cutting you from.
Like, you know those awkward moments where your friend's like, I don't know, this way they're going to look at me. And, like, my sister, we're just going across the road, please. Now you don't even end up going across the road. And I think, I would tell my younger self, you know, take your place. Take your place, because I always felt the need to minimize myself so that others can be maximized.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, just take your space and take your place. Mm. I would tell my younger self, your skin is beautiful.
Mm. Same.
Your curls, your coils, like, they are perfect. Like, each and every strand resembles, like, one of your ancestors. It's like who you are and where you're from, and don't be ashamed of that. Don't run away from that. And be authentic, you know, be you, girl. Like, so overall, I would just say, like, you're perfect the way you are.
Yeah.
So cliche, but it's so real.
Yeah. What's a book or movie from your childhood that was significant or had a significant impact on you?
Okay, so a book I would definitely say Taking Flight by Michaela De Prince.
What is it about?
So basically, Michaela De Prince, she's a, like, high class ballerina, but she was born in Sierra Leone and she has a skin condition. So her skin, like, it's, I don't know how to explain, like, she has a skin condition, so she was really bullied because of her skin, like, growing up. And she lived in an orphanage. Her parents were killed in front of her. Like, she had a very, very troubled childhood. Like, very troubled childhood. Like, she was always outcasted. Like, she was called the devil's child because of her skin. Like, she had a very extremely, like, way worse than mine.
Yeah.
But we had similar experiences. Mm-hmm. And one day she saw a magazine of a ballerina and she made that decision. This is what I'm going to be.
Yeah.
This is who I'm going to become. Mm-hmm. And she did that. Like, even though within the whole world of, you know, entertainment industry, dancers, ballerinas, like, there's always a standard. Like, she even talks about, like, how there was never stockings in her shade, or the ballet shoes were never, ever her shade. Or if you're not the color of, you know, that paper, like, that peanut butter paper, then, like, you wouldn't be considered to be on, like, a high ballerina. Unlike, you know, a level that's worthy of being on a high stage and all of that. And she did it. Like, despite all of the things that the odds were against her, like, she set that goal and she achieved it. She executed the thing she set her mind to. She wasn't defined by her skin color. She wasn't defined by how she was treated. So that was, like, very inspirational to me, because you don't need to be seen as a product of your pain. You don't need to be seen as your experiences. Like, you can be seen as the things that you choose to be.
Yeah.
And the things that you choose to achieve. And something that I'm also trying to work on is executing. Like, she executes her task. She achieved and obtained the thing she set herself out to do. So, Like, I think that was a book that really, 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 really like.
When did you read this book?
My granny actually bought me this book. I don't know. I think I was like 11. I don't know. It was way back. I don't remember. But all I know is that if she can do it, and if she can still be a performer and still be respected, so can we.
Yeah.
Because there will always be someone who has life, like lived a more troubled life, and someone who has it better than you. But it's what you do with what you have that makes you who you are and who you become. So I think that's something I really took from her. And shout out to Michaela.
If you could have a dinner with a famous figure, who would it be?
Who would you choose?
This one I have to think of. I don't really think a musician, because most of the people... Let me think.
Why not? Okay, I think... our future selves.
Real. That's such a good answer.
Yes. I think our future selves. I think I'd love to have a conversation with like our future selves and ask us like, what did we have to do? What did we have to endure? Like, what decisions did we have to make?
To
get there. And are you fulfilled? Are you satisfied where you are? Like, how are you feeling? Like, you know. So I think our future selves, maybe Michaela de Prince, but it wouldn't be a thing of, because like, I feel like all of my answers have been answered. All of my questions have been answered through reading her book. I feel like, and her books, I feel like our future selves, because hey, girl, I don't know. The future is very interesting and I'm excited for our futures.
But like, besides us, I actually genuinely don't know.
Like, who's the thing about me, Ne, is I don't know. I don't see celebrities as, I don't see them on a pedestal. That's my thing. Like, same. I just see them as average humans who experience things that everyone has experienced at some
point. And with me, because I like fashion, sometimes it's genuinely, I like the person, like, because of their fashion, so I don't know them beyond like that. So I wouldn't really know or want to like.
Would you want to be known beyond?
Yes.
What you wear?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I want to be known. Like, I don't want to be known just for what I look like. I actually want to be known for like. Hence why I started this podcast. You know, like, I actually want to be known for my personality and like the things that I do and like have an influence on like the generations to come.
Yeah, I think that's a very good start. Like, when your intentions always like from a place of hey, instead of a place of like then
wanting to be known and stuff like that. Yeah.
So for who else would you wanna?
I genuinely can't think right now.
Like, I don't know. The thing is, like, I admire a lot of people because of what they went through, but. Would I want to sit at a dinner table with them?
Yeah.
And, like, because the thing is, I know my journey is not like their journey.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, even though they can give you that advice, it might not be applicable to your life. So, celebrities,
Okay, what's your go-to or comfort food?
Okay. So I'm vegetarian currently. I do not eat meat. I think I made that decision because I was trying to transition from a place of, surrendering my worldly desires and, like, dying to my flesh. So, like, not eating meat was, like, me symbolizing, like, you know, not, you know, falling a victim to, like, worldly things and... trying to, you know, build that thing. And it's actually made me feel a lot better, like, energetically, like, within myself, like, my desires. Like,
physically and...
Yeah, like, not eating meat, like, hey, I don't know. Because it's like... Sorry for those who love meat. But, like, the energy, how that animal dies and how that animal feels, you inheriting, like, what you put inside of your body, the same thing of, like, what you put inside of your brain, like... you become. Like,
yeah.
Even was this Proverbs 23, like, as a man thinks, so he is. Like, everything that you think, you become. So, I don't know.
Oh, for you, it felt like...
Hey, I don't know what those animals were thinking, yeah. But I'm eating it, like, I'm eating it. So, I think before, like, my comfort food used to be Dunk Twins. Yo! I used to love Dunk Twins. Like, yo, me and Dunk
Twins. Same, I also like them, but these days, I don't know. They don't hit, but my comfort food... I would say Slab Chips, but they have to be like... Chips.
Phillips Chips.
Yeah, because there's chips. Like, I like fries, so McDonald's fries, and then I also like specific Slab Chips. But for me, like, chips in general, like, that's my comfort food. Like, when I get takeaway, I need to have chips on the side, fries on the side. Like, for me, that's what makes my meal.
Chips. I think... It used to be Dunk Twins, also sushi. I love sushi. Now, what is my comfort food? I don't think I find comfort in food.
Do you think it's because you're vegetarian or like...
I think ever since I've become vegetarian, like my whole relationship with food has changed.
But maybe as you go, you'll find like something that...
Carrot cake. Yeah. Ice cream, carrot cake. Yeah. I think that's like the food that I love. Like, makes me feel.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I necessarily find comfort in food.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel bad for eating. Like, I had to pick the plant out of the tree.
Ish. I'm joking. But yeah, I would say chips. Chips is my comfort food.
Hey.
If you could visit any place in the world, where would it be?
Where would you go?
I really want to go to... Okay, I like Europe. Mm. I've only been to Croatia, but I feel like when I went, I didn't get to like experience like the full thing because I was there for dancing. So most of the time, we were there like dancing. Yeah. But like, I really want to go to places like Rome and... Okay, apparently Paris is overrated, but like I want to experience it for myself.
Apparently Paris looks like CBD.
But I want to experience it for myself because I like aesthetics. I like the way places look. And also I want to go to an island. I don't really care which one, but like maybe Mauritius, even Maldives, you know, something like, not something, you know.
Yeah. I think with me, I do care about aesthetics, but I care more so about feelings than how it looks. Because if I'm in a place and I just feel like... Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I love Asia. I love Asia. My experience of, like, going to Asia was always, like, people there are so loving, so kind. Whether you understand them or not.
Yeah.
Everything is so, like... I just love it. I love it. And also the food. I feel like... Especially in Thailand, like, that lifestyle was more healthier. Like, I could live on fruits.
Okay, yeah, so, I also want to go to Thailand.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Asia. Mm. Where would I want to go? I would want to explore the whole of Africa. Because I feel like everyone wants to jump the seas. Everyone wants to skip the seas, but we don't actually take time to actually appreciate, our own land and where we're from. Mm. And I feel like there's so much beauty in Africa. So... I'd love to go, like, everywhere in Africa, like, Ethiopia. Oh, yeah. I love Ethiopia. Seychelles.
I
want
to go to Egypt, guys. Like, I don't know why, but I want to go to Egypt. Mm. Like, for some reasons, I feel like there's a lot, you know.
Yeah, I feel connected to Egypt. I think also with me, like, why I felt connected to Ethiopia, when we went there, we had a crossing over firelight, and... Everyone there thought I was Ethiopian. Like, the amount of times that I can see your passport. Like, people were speaking Amharic to me, and I'm like, this one is not me. Mm. And
did you go there for like holiday?
No, so we were just crossing over to go to Asia.
Oh.
So we used Ethiopian Airlines.
Yeah,
that's another story. But basically, I had these two Ethiopian friends growing up, Nathan. And his older brother, I really forgot your name, I'm sorry. But like, yeah, so in my primary school, not primary, in my like preschool, as we would walk, they would live like walking to school. Like they would live like in the road to school. So sometimes my mom would pick them up and then we'd go together. And sometimes like my mom would have to work late. So I would just stay at their house. So we really developed like a very nice relationship. And their mom was so loving and accepting. And because like they low-key have similar features to me.
Yeah.
And I never felt acceptance within my own community. Like I was like, oh, these people look like me and they're so loving and they love me how I am. Like I resonated with that culture.
Yeah.
And even they were experiencing that within like South Africa, like you're outcasted. But I felt, you know, united with them, or I just felt a sense of belonging whenever I was at their house.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that. So I feel like that's also why I've always resonated with Ethiopian culture. And I feel like most African countries, except for South Africa, like are so accepting of other African countries. Mm. I feel like we're very xenophobic, yo. And
I wouldn't know. I feel like I wouldn't have a say on that because like I genuinely don't know like other countries. I don't know. I'm not educated enough to know or to have a say about.
Also, I won't say I'm educated enough, but based on the experiences I've had with people who are not from South Africa but are African, they've always been very heartwarming.
Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's why I resonated, like, Eastern countries, like, Eastern African countries. But I also want to go to, like, you know, Kenya. I want to go everywhere in Africa. I really want to go everywhere in Africa. Like, one day I'm going to have a music tour that goes everywhere in Africa.
Yeah.
Like, yo, yeah. And I would like to go to Brazil. I think they're also very, you know, lively people. I'd love to go to Brazil. I'd love to travel everywhere, but I feel like Europe and America would be lost.
I feel like America would be lost for me.
Woo, guys, I'm so sorry, but you know, that cough came at the right time. Like, that's a real.
I feel like America, I don't know. Also, I feel like at the same time, I feel like it's overrated or like so much has happened there. I just feel like it would just be too much for me.
The thing about America is that, like, the performing arts schools that I'm applying to, I mean, in America. And even though I don't necessarily resonate with the culture, the experiences that you might gain in those countries are valid. I feel like it's not where I want to be, but it has what I want to help me be what I want to become. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. But I think also with us as Africans, I feel like maybe we just also need to create spaces, those
opportunities for ourselves.
Yes, you need to cultivate a culture. Because
a lot of people go that side.
Yes. And then, like, you get your knowledge, you go overseas. Mm. Like, let's start, you know, feeding ourselves.
But I also feel like we need to start supporting each other so that when we start, you know, making those opportunities, we're able to, you know, like, get support from other people so that it can grow.
Yeah, so I think that's also very important because I feel like if you're not even recognizing your local and your homeland, like, who else wants to listen to you? And sometimes maybe, I'm just saying with music, for example, your sound is just not respected in that specific area and needs to cater for another audience. That's why I love, like, the creative industry because, like, it's so diverse and you can be, even though it's a very populated and saturated space, like, it's very diverse and through expression, you can literally express anything. And I feel like with us, we just need to acknowledge people for expressing things the way that they do.
Yeah.
Because, hey, you know, like when you have colored parents, aunties, oh, you want to, you're wearing this. Or like, like you want to look like this. So like African parents, I feel like there's more pressure.
Yeah.
Mm, there's more pressure.
And some of them don't accept certain like careers. Mm. Like if it's not like a doctor, if it's not a businesswoman or this, like, they just don't.
Yo, like, I was on my knees with my mom to take arts as a subject. I was here for, like, so long. I was like, please, 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 can I take arts? And I think, you know, once we acknowledge, like, each other and, like, see each other for each other's creativity, like, it's easier to, you know, build a room where your creativity is valued, where, like, you don't sell yourself short as an artist. Like, if you look at European countries, like, musicians get grants, like creatives get grants because they understand that like art is a very time-based thing. And in South Africa, like, hey, you're doing that. Like, hey, you did it to yourself. Yeah. Why did you choose going into that space? Like, they see, I don't know, performance and everything as, like, very popper-y aspects. But it's, to us, it's life. And I feel like once we start, you know, putting the value in that, like, in each other's creations, like, other people will be like, I want some of that. Yeah. I'm going to Africa to study.
Exactly. We can create it here. Yes. People can come here.
Like, it would be so nice, you know, imagine if we had, like, a very strong, I wouldn't even say company, but just, like, an organization that, like, was so prominent, like, that the whole of Africa, like, there's creatives, the whole of Africa that are signed to that thing. Like, whether it be models, whether it be dancers, whether it be musicians, whether it be graphic designers, like, everything, like, just a whole room filled with creatives.
Yeah.
And they're like, I know someone from Seychelles. I know someone from Tanzania. I know someone from this. And, like, we come together and, you know, feel our culture. That would be so cool, man.
That would be a good idea.
Instead of us, now I'm running away from my country to go and study.
One word to describe your high school experience.
The way I'm gonna divert this question back to you, then we'll come back because I feel like let me cook a worthy answer for your question.
Right now, I also can't think of a worthy answer, but I was gonna say crazy because your high school, no, it has been a lot. But and to describe it in one word, I feel like that's a lot.
It's been a test.
Yeah.
Is that a word that I can use? Test? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. For me, I would say it has also been a test.
Yeah, like, the highs are high, the lows are low. And I think, hey, high school, man, it's cute.
It's not cute. It's cute.
Like, I've cried. Sleep is nice.
Yeah.
Got sent to hospital because mental health is sliding. Like, there's been so many things that high school has brought, but I also feel like it was a very experimental time for me.
Yeah.
And to express who I am, you know. And now when there's no, like, big cameras watching, like, it's not on you. You can do what you want and be what you want. So that when it is time for, like, to deliver, like, you're grounded in who you are and you know who you are.
Yeah.
And I think high school was the place to, you know, find that.
I feel like it can either, like, make or break you.
But even if it breaks you, you're going to have to rebuild yourself.
Yeah.
And that, like, reconstruction is going to be better than the original piece. So I think, hey, it has to happen sometime, whether it's in primary or high school or later in life. I feel like we all have to go through hardship to appreciate, you know, blissful moments.
So, yeah, that was our last question.
No, I love talking to you, man. This is really fun.
Yeah,
this
also really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for coming here.
So, may I ask, what is one thing that you've gained from this conversation?
A lot, actually. But genuinely, I would say the main thing was that your past experiences, like, shouldn't define you. What is that thing that you said? Your pain...
you're not a product of your pain.
Product of your pain. Yes, exactly that. Mm-hmm. So I feel we shouldn't let, like, the bad things, like, define us, and we should take the good out of it, basically. And yeah, there's a reason for everything that happens in life.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sandile.
Thank you too.
This is the beginning of great things. So, yeah, I'm honored to be here. Thank you once again.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into Unfiltered Chats with Z. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in to more unfiltered discussions on a variety of topics. Until next time, stay curious, stay tuned, and stay authentic. This is Z signing out. See you on the next episode.